There was a small stack of Reader's Digests on the little table beside the bed, none of them dated later than March 1960. Jackson, the library guy, the same one who had sworn to the truth of the Kentucky Fried Mutant Chicken Creature story, who had told him the story of the black freight trains that the government uses to haul political prisoners off to secret Northern Californian concentration camps, moving across the country in the dead of the night, Jackson had also told him that the CIA used the Reader's Digest as a front for their branch offices around the world. He said that every Reader's Digest office in every country was really CIA.
"A joke," said the late Mr. Wood in Shadow's memory. "How can we be sure the CIA wasn't involved in the Kennedy assassination?"
Shadow cracked the window open a few inches, enough for fresh air to get in, enough for the cat to be able to get out onto the balcony outside. He turned on the bedside lamp, climbed into bed, and read for a little, trying to turn off his mind, to get the last few days out of his head, picking the dullest-looking articles in the dullest-looking digests. He noticed he was falling asleep halfway through "I Am John's Pancreas." He barely had time enough to turn out the bedside light and put his head down on the pillow before his eyes closed for the night. Later, he was never able to recollect the sequences and details of that dream. Attempts to remember it produced nothing more than a tangle of dark images, underexposed in the dark room of his mind. There was a girl. He had met her somewhere, and now they were walking across a bridge. It spanned a small lake in the middle of a town. The wind was ruffling the surface of the lake, making waves tipped with white caps, which seemed to Shadow to be tiny hands reaching for him.
"Down there," said the woman.
She was wearing a leopard print skirt which flapped and tossed in the wind, and the flesh between the top of her stockings and her skirt was creamy and soft, and in his dream, on the bridge, before God and the world, Shadow went down to his knees in front of her, burying his head in her crotch, drinking in the intoxicating jungle female scent of her. He became aware in his dream of his erection in real life, a rigid, pounding, monstrous thing as painful in its hardness as the erections he'd had as a boy when he was crashing into puberty with no idea of what the unprompted rigidities were, knowing only that they scared him. He pulled away and looked upward, and still he could not see her face. But his mouth was seeking hers, and her lips were soft against his, and his hands were cupping her breasts, and then they were running across the satin smoothness of her skin, pushing into and parting the furs that hid her waist, sliding into the wonderful cleft of her which warmed and wetted and parted for him, opening to his hand like a flower. The woman purred against him ecstatically, her hand moving down to the hardness of him and squeezing it. He pushed the bedsheets away and rolled on top of her, his hand parting her thighs, her hand guiding him between her legs, where one thrust, one magical push. Now he was back in his old prison cell with her, and he was kissing her deeply. She wrapped her arms tightly around him, clamped her legs about his legs to hold him tight so he could not pull out, not even if he wanted to. Never had he kissed lips so soft. He had not known that there were lips so soft in the whole world. Her tongue, though, was sandpaper rough as it slipped against his.
"Who are you?"
She made no answer, just pushed him onto his back, and in one lithe movement straddled him and began to ride him. No, not to ride him, to insinuate herself against him in series of silken smooth waves, each more powerful than the one before, strokes and beats and rhythms which crashed against his mind and his body just as the wind waves on the lake splashed against the shore. Her nails were needle sharp and they pierced his sides, raking them, but he felt no pain, only pleasure. Everything was transmuted by some alchemy into moments of utter pleasure. He struggled to find himself, struggled to talk, his head now filled with sand dunes and desert winds.
"Who are you?"
he asked again, gasping for the words. She stared at him with eyes the color of dark amber, then lowered her mouth to his and kissed him with a passion, kissed him so completely and so deeply that there, on the bridge over the lake, in his prison cell, in the bed in the Cairo funeral home, he almost came. He rode the sensation like a kite riding a hurricane, willing it not to crest, not to explode, wanting it never to end. He pulled it under control. He had to warn her.
"My wife, Laura, she will kill you."
"Not me."
A fragment of nonsense bubbled up from somewhere in his mind. In medieval days, it was said that a woman on top during coitus would conceive a bishop. That was what they called it, trying for a bishop. He wanted to know her name, but he dared not ask her a third time, and she pushed her chest against his. And he could feel the hard nubs of her nipples against his chest, and she was squeezing him, somehow squeezing him down there, deep inside her, and this time he could not ride it or surf it. This time it picked him up and spun and tumbled him away. And he was arching up, pushing into her as deeply as he could imagine, as if they were in some way part of the same creature, tasting, drinking, holding, wanting.
Let it happen.
Her voice a throaty feline growl.
Give it to me. Let it happen.
And he came, spasming and dissolving, the back of his mind itself liquefying, then sublimating slowly from one state to the next. Somewhere in there, at the end of it, he took a breath, a clear draft of air he felt all the way down to the depths of his lungs, and he knew that he had been holding his breath for a long time now. 3 years at least, perhaps even longer.
Now, rest,
she said, and she kissed his eyelids with her soft lips.
Let it go. Let it all go.
The sleep he slept after that was deep and dreamless and comforting, and Shadow dived deep and embraced it. The light was strange. It was, he checked his watch, 6:45 a.m., and still dark outside, but the room was filled with a pale blue dimness. He climbed out of bed. He was certain that he had been wearing pajamas when he went to bed, but now he was naked and the air was cold on his skin. He walked to the window and closed it. There had been a snowstorm in the night. 6 inches had fallen, perhaps more. The corner of the town that Shadow could see from his window, dirty and run down, had been transformed into somewhere clean and different. These houses were not abandoned and forgotten. They were frosted into elegance. The streets had vanished completely, lost beneath a white field of snow. There was an idea that hovered at the edge of his perception, something about transience. It flickered and was gone. He could see as well as if it were full daylight. In the mirror, Shadow noticed something strange. He stepped closer and stared, puzzled. All his bruises had vanished. He touched his side, pressing firmly with his fingertips, feeling for one of the deep pains that told him he had encountered Mr. Stone and Mr. Wood, hunting for the greening blossoms of bruise that Mad Sweeney had gifted him with, and finding nothing. His face was clear and unmarked. His sides, however, and his back, he twisted to examine it, were scratched with what looked like claw marks. He hadn't dreamed it then. Not entirely. Shadow opened the drawers and put on what he found, an ancient pair of blue denim Levi's, a shirt, a thick blue sweater, and a black undertaker's coat he found hanging in the wardrobe at the back of the room. He wondered again who the clothes had belonged to. He wore his own old shoes. The house was still asleep. He crept through it, willing the floorboards not to creak. And then he was outside, out through the front door, not the mortuary, not this morning, not when he didn't have to. And he walked through the snow, his feet leaving deep prints in the virgin snow, his steps crunching as they pushed the soft snow deep onto the sidewalk. It was lighter out than it had seemed from inside the house, and the snow reflected the light from the sky. After 15 minutes walking, Shadow came to a bridge with a big sign on the side of it warning him he was now leaving historical Cairo. A man stood under the bridge, tall and gangling, sucking on a cigarette and shivering continually. Shadow thought he recognized the man, but the light on the snow was playing tricks on his eyes, and he walked closer and closer in order to be sure. The man wore a patched denim jacket and a baseball cap. And then, under the bridge in the winter darkness, he was close enough to see the purple smudge of bruise around the man's eye, and he said,
"Good morning, Mad Sweeney."
The world was so quiet. Not even cars disturbed the snowbound silence.
"Hey, man,"
said Mad Sweeney. He did not look up. The cigarette had been rolled by hand. Shadow wondered if the man was smoking a joint. No, the smell was tobacco.
"You keep hanging out under bridges, Mad Sweeney. People gonna think you're a troll."
This time Mad Sweeney looked up. Shadow could see the whites of his eyes all around his irises. The man looked scared.
I was looking for you. You gotta help me, man. I fucked up big time.
He sucked on his hand-rolled cigarette, pulled it away from his mouth,